I'm Dave Crooks from the DLC Media News Center. On this weekend's Focus on the Community, it's time to speculate on some of the hot political races across the Hoosier State. My special guest is Jim Shulla. Jim was the former Statehouse reporter for Wish TV in Indianapolis and was also the longtime host of Indiana Week in Review on Statewide Public TV. Jim is officially retired but has agreed to talk Hoosier politics today with me on this weekend show. And are you out of bed this early in the morning, Jim, or how are things going with retirement life? So
I'm getting up earlier these days, Dave, than I did when I was working, but I'm also going to bed earlier.
Well, that kind of comes with age. So, and I know this is a year old news, but congratulations to you and our friend Pat Rios on the nuptials. So I've been kind of following you guys on Twitter, a little traveling, a little fun. So that's always a good thing.
Well, thank you. I like to say I get married every 47 years or so, whether
I can do it or not. Well, I think that's a fun thing. You and Pat make a great couple. But let's talk a little Indiana politics. First of all, I know you're not covering the Statehouse every day like you do, but guys like you and I still keep a close eye on what's going on around the state. And of course, you were in the Statehouse when, you know, we had 16 years of a Democrat administration and things were pretty even in the House. But now you've got a supermajority. Democrats haven't had a governor since Joe Kernan in 2004. Has the climate gotten much better, in your opinion, in the Hoosier State for the Democrats? Or is this going to be another big year for Indiana Republicans?
Oh, this is going to be a big year for Indiana Republicans. You know, I write a column once a month for the Indianapolis Business Journal, their forefront section, and I've got one that's going to be published a week from today, but it's already been submitted, and I've a series of questions that I have leading up to this election, and one of them is, what's with the Democrats? I mean, it's not just that they don't seem to have numbers on their side. They don't seem to have a message. They're short on candidates. I mean, I watched a candidate forum with the U.S. Senate candidates the other night, and Tom McDermott went on a long rant about how Washington Democrats are ignoring Indiana. And I think part of the issue there is Tom McDermott. I think he's an example of just how thin the candidate pool is for Indiana Democrats, just how there's no bench, as they like to say, because there's a guy who lost a primary 2 years ago in northern Indiana in the first district, and now he's running statewide. It just seems like Democrats in this state have a long way to go to become competitive on a statewide basis.
Yeah, that's something that I still scratch my head about. I mean, obviously, I thought John Gregg was our best option for governor in both 16 and 2012, but he came very close in 12, not quite as close in 16, of course, due to the Trump effect. But yeah, I don't even know who we've got on the bench, and we'll talk about the governor's race a little bit later in the show. But I kind of agree. I don't see things trending blue as some people would like to believe. But let's talk about the U.S. Senate race. Todd Young, I looked at his campaign report. He's raised well over $14 million. He's all over statewide TV. Tom McDermott, as you mentioned, the mayor of Hammond, I think he struggled to raise $1 million, if that. I don't even think it's that close, but he won't be.
He's a little over $1 million, but yeah, Todd Young still got over $5 million on hand at the last report. It's not a contest money-wise. Now, you know, money isn't everything. And some folks will tell you there's only been one public poll published in this race, and it showed it to be within the margin of error. without denigrating anyone or their efforts, that poll's garbage.
I can't see it either.
And what I can tell you is, in the U.S. Senate race, those candidates are polling, the parties are polling, they know where the race stands. And on the Democrat side, you got Tom McDermott complaining about a lack of support, and that's support from people who conduct polls from Washington, D.C. And you got Todd Young not giving a direct answer to any question because he doesn't feel threatened.
Yeah. Well, and if anyone should be complaining, it should be Tim Ryan in Ohio, why the National Democrats are not giving him enough love right now. He's got a chance to win that seat.
Yeah, but Tim Ryan doesn't want the help. He wants to distance himself from Joe Biden and the issues regarding inflation and government spending. I've seen interviews with him where he says, we're going to do this on our own.
Well, and then that may be the signal that would say, okay, stay out if you're a big PAC or whatever on the Democrat side. But I don't know. That one looks like that could be a close race. But with all the money that Todd Young is spending and looking at the trends in Indiana, I just don't know if Tom McDermott can make that a tight race. I'd be surprised if it was.
I would agree. I absolutely agree. I think Todd Young is coasting through this one. Todd Young hasn't run a negative ad yet, near as I can tell, and that's the best indicator you can get from a candidate. If they think it's close, they'll be doing negative ads to try to change that circumstance. And Todd Young, I mean, did you know he's a Marine?
Yeah, he's pretty much made that clear that he's a Marine. That's pretty much the ad I've noticed. So
that's what he's leaning on, and I guess that appeals to a certain demographic, but I also find it interesting that Tom McDermott's got a pretty sterling military career of his own that he can point to, and nobody knows about that, and it's all about having the money to get the message out, and Young's got it, and McDermott doesn't.
Well, let's talk about the open seat in District 9. This is the Trey Hollingsworth. They called him Tennessee Trey when he came to Indiana to run for that seat. But he did win, what, three terms? And there's talk about him possibly running for governor. But you've got, what, Erin Houchin? I think she's, a former state senator in Indiana. Is that correct?
Yeah, and she gave up her state senate seat in order to run in this congressional race. She felt like she needed to devote the time there. I think, you know, for the voters of Southern Indiana, that's going to be an upgrade, because Erin Houchin is a hard worker. She's got a great reputation at the State House, and she's going to be much more visible. Trey Hollingsworth, you know, whatever you want to say about his Tennessee roots, he tried to avoid the media. He would go to Republican gatherings, but, beyond that, was not a high-profile office holder.
And the Democrat in that ninth district is Matthew Fife. I haven't heard much from him, but that's really Houchin's race to lose. You would agree with that, right?
Yeah, Matthew's not related to Barney, is he?
I don't know, but I don't think so. So again, that Houchin should win the open seat in the ninth district, and that probably won't even be close, will it?
No, that's the over under on that one is pretty easy to spot. He put your money on Houchin.
In District 1, Frank Mervan, the guy that beat Tom McDermott 2 years ago for the Pete Vasklosky open seat, he picked up a nice win. They've since redistricted that race. They went a little east, if I understand the new map. And according to something from the Cook Political Report, as well as 538, the district's partisan lean did not change significantly. They're claiming that if you take the new district, it gave Biden about a 53.4% win to 45% for Trump. Mervan is being challenged by a lady by the name of Jennifer Ruth Green. She's an African-American, which Republicans are hoping that's going to split some of that vote. What's going to happen in District 1 in Indiana, Jim?
Yeah, back to the point you were making, there was a lot of talk during redistricting Republicans might take away some of the Democratic advantage in the first district, and it didn't happen. They concentrated on making the fifth district more Republican, and kind of left everything else where it was. So, you know, it could get close. But I don't think Mervan gets beaten. If he does, it's a huge embarrassment for him and the Democrats. I talked to a former state senator the other day, a Republican, who told me that the Republican viewpoint is that the first district is trending more Republican over time, much like Southern Indiana went from Democrat to Republican. You've got folks from Chicago, from the Chicago area, who are moving over there, who may have more conservative views than the folks who are from there. And over time, that's going to be a more competitive district, but it's probably too soon to expect a change this time.
We're talking with Jim Shulla, former State House reporter at Wish TV and former host of Indiana Week in Review. And even though he's officially retired, still knows a lot about Hoosier politics. I got to bring up District 8 on the congressional side. You knew that I ran for that seat about 10 years ago and thought I had a real chance. I thought I had a chance of winning that. We did everything right, but still lost by 10 points. And then a lot of people I've run into lately, they're impressed with Ray McCormick. He's probably run a decent campaign, probably the best since I ran 10 years ago. But you think that race is on the radar at this point for either side?
You know what, Dave? We'll tell everybody that you brought up Ray's name and you tried to give him a boost here. I don't expect the outcome to be out of the ordinary in that race.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough. I mean, Ray doesn't have a lot of money, and I guess you and I know how the game is played. I've yet to see Bouchon on broadcast TV, so that tells me that they probably polled the district a few weeks ago and feel they're in pretty good shape, or you'd be seeing a lot of advertising right now.
That's right, and the reality is Larry Bouchon's been in office long enough that he's got pretty high name ID, and so there's not a lot that he has to do. A newcomer taking on somebody who's been there that long, it's a big challenge.
Now, we won't get into the other congressional races, but I want to kind of sum up the federal races with this. Democrats seem to be putting all their eggs in the Roe versus Wade decision earlier this summer. I know that in the suburban areas and maybe the higher educated areas, larger cities, that might have a real impact, but I'm not so sure it has legs in these rural parts of the state. Do you?
I think we're going to find out. You know, that the description you just made about higher educated and suburban areas feeling more strongly about the matter of pro-choice versus pro-life, I think has been reflected in other states. In Kansas, where they rejected a referendum, that was the way the demographics broke out there. So that makes complete sense to me. The problem the Democrats have is they don't really have anywhere else to go. You know, I don't think Joe Biden's real popular. The interesting thing about Joe Biden is that, you know, elections are about choices, and you stand him up next to Donald Trump. For a lot of people, he was an easy choice, but now he's there, and you know, he's almost 80 years old, and he's showing his age, and you stand him up against younger, more vital people, and suddenly he's not as attractive, and I think a lot of the country is thinking that it'll be a different kind of choice in 2 years from now, and he's not been an effective messenger himself.
Right. Yeah, he does struggle messaging, but he's gotten a lot done, I think, for a president that's been in for 2 years, whether you agree with some of his policies or not, but and trying to work with both sides at times. But boy, it's just so toxic right now. And then you got the former president constantly gets coverage each and every week, and he's constantly bashing him. And I don't know. I just we'll see what happens 2 years from now and who decides to really run. And I'm not convinced Joe Biden will run for a second term, even though he has said that he intends to. But that's still a long way away.
He has to say that he intends to at this point, certainly until next Wednesday.
Yeah.
I don't expect him to run. I, you know, and it, it, I just don't think it'll happen.
I don't either. So if you had to look at the national landscape, I mean, my goodness, I never would think that Herschel Walker would have been a credible candidate in Georgia. But yet here we had the microphone incident yesterday or on Thursday where Schumer was talking to President Biden. And it sounds like they've got some internal polling showing that Walker's picking up steam and that one might get away from Senator Warnock, who's not been there very long, only 2 years. But whether it's that state or some of the other tightly contested races, do the Democrats have any hope of keeping the Senate in your view, or what do you think the national landscape looks like?
Well, let me first go back to the first point you made there. Herschel Walker is not an attractive candidate. He's not an attractive candidate from anybody's perspective. There are Republicans who are getting behind him because they want that office. They want control of the Senate. It's got nothing to do with Herschel Walker. There, you know,
yep.
it's got nothing to do with Herschel Walker. And they're trying to change the subject. In fact, I think Lindsey Graham was down in Georgia the other day trying to talk about anything but Herschel's troubles. I think it's going to be really close in the Senate, and you know, there are some races, like there's one in Nevada, there's one in Utah that could have a bearing on the balance there that really haven't gotten much attention. So I'm reluctant to tell you how it's going to fall in the end. I think there's a chance Democrats still hold on. There's a pretty good chance it ends up being 50-50 again.
But, yeah, and if Evan McMullen would beat Mike Lee in Utah, I mean, he's claimed he won't caucus with either side. He could have more power than Joe Manchin has had the last 2 years.
Exactly. It's interesting circumstance.
The U.S. House, any chance that the Democrats hold on, or is that a foregone conclusion, in your opinion?
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, today's news, when you see that somebody broke into Nancy Pelosi's house and attacked her husband, there could be some outside factors here that influence the way people vote. Certainly, it doesn't look good for the Democrats at this point. And that's what you would anticipate in an off-year election. And you talked about President Trump. I mean, with all that's going on with him, I think there are a lot of Trump voters who react to the news, and he keeps making news. I mean, until Election Day, you can't be sure what sort of an influence he's going to have on people. So,
yep.
So I would bet the Republicans at this point, but again, don't bet the house.
Well, that's a good point. And one thing that drives me crazy just from doing it, from running in 12, but just knowing the whole situation, you got, what, 425 congressional seats, and supposedly about 15% are considered competitive. The rest, there's no way that either side could overcome the Democrat or Republican-leaning districts. And to me, that's just sad, but that's where we're at. So it's going to – and I guess –
435, don't mean – sorry.
Oh, thank you. 435, you're right. And then what about – I mean, when you look at the congressional situation, a lot of Democrats are retiring this year. I think there's, what, 17 retirements perhaps, but that's also a big factor, isn't it?
Sure. It's always easier for an incumbent to win against, name ID is the biggest commodity this side of money in politics, and the money is to buy name ID. If you're an incumbent, you've been there a while, you build up name ID, and when you leave, then somebody else has to start from scratch. And unfortunately, Washington has become so polarized, it's not a place where some folks want to stay. They get elected and they find out it's not what they thought it was going to be, and we're seeing some changeover.
Yep, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment, but I want to touch on a statewide race that seems to be getting some attention, which is not always easy when you're running for Secretary of State and some of those other lower-level statewide offices, but you've got Democrat Destiny Wells against Republican Diego Morales. And here at the convention, they went ahead and decided to go with Morales instead of the incumbent. First of all, he's had apparently a former staffer claim that there was sexual harassment going on when they worked together on past campaigns. Does the average person even know who's running, let alone that he's got these issues? Or what do you think's going on when it comes to that race?
Well, I think this race has got a lot higher profile than your average Secretary of State race. And he's had accusations of sexual harassment from two women. But I think that's maybe the least of his problems. He's trying to run on a military record. He appears in uniform. Excuse me. He appears in uniform on his social media and some of his campaign materials. And he didn't fulfill his contract with the Indiana National Guard, and he can't explain why. He's referred reporters to the Department of Defense and to the National Guard. And he got fired twice from the Secretary of State's office, once by Todd Rokita, once by Charlie White. I mean, I think he's completely unfit for office, but he's a Republican, and it's Indiana, and so he's probably still the favorite.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, one of the questions his race prompted me to pose, who's a bigger hypocrite, Mike Pence or Todd Rokita? And by the way, there's no wrong answer to that question. I mean, Mike Pence had his life threatened by election deniers. Diego Morales got the GOP nomination for Secretary of State by being an election denier, and then Mike Pence held a fundraiser for him a couple of weeks ago.
Incredible.
Todd Rokita was Secretary of State, fired Diego Morales, and now he's endorsed Diego Morales and posed for pictures with him.
It's just amazing. And by the way, the fact that the Republicans nominated this guy over an incumbent, what's your inside baseball on that, in your opinion?
Two things. Diego's a Trumpster, and there were a lot of Trumpsters at the Republican state convention. And also, there were a lot of folks, a lot of conservatives who were unhappy with Governor Holcomb. Well worth noting that Governor Holcomb got booed at his own Republican convention, and Holly Sullivan was his choice to fill a vacancy in the Secretary of State's office. So the folks who were booing Holcomb were the anti-maskers, anti-vaxxers who didn't like the way that he handled the pandemic. And so you take that together with the Trumpsters, and it was enough to defeat Holly Sullivan. It's a very strange outcome. And I can tell you there are I've got some old-line Republican friends who are just disgusted by the circumstance and will not support Diego Morales. But again, your point is valid. How widely does that point get out, and how much are people paying attention? Democrats haven't won a statewide race in Indiana since 2012. If Destiny Wells were to pull it off, it'd be the first time in 10 years.
Well, that would be big, too, considering that what's happening in other states when it comes to electing election deniers to the Secretary of State's office, that would definitely give Democrats some help when it comes to trying to block anybody that might be an election denier. But we got a couple of minutes left, and I want to cover a couple of quick issues. What's Mitch Daniels up to now that he's leaving Purdue?
Well, I don't think anybody knows. Of course, He opened the door to running for governor. I think maybe you saw Adam Wren, local journalist, had a piece out the other day and said that he quoted Daniels as saying that he's disinclined to run for governor. I don't expect that he will. That falls under the category of been there, done that. If you look at Mitch Daniels' career, he has moved from one thing to the other. He was a political staffer, you know, worked his way up to the White House. Then he went to a think tank, the Hudson Institute. Then he went to Eli Lilly and got into business. And then he decided he wanted to be an elected official. And he went from there to academia. I mean, I think the record shows he'll look for a new challenge, maybe a new area of life to try to influence people.
And as this race is over November 8th, then there'll be the look at, on 2024. And unfortunately, in the days of modern campaigning, you got to start fundraising for the next cycle. Let's touch on the Indiana governor's race. Republicans apparently see an opportunity, and I see a huge list of possible candidates. Can you rattle off what you know so far on who may run on the Republican side?
Well, here's the first thing you need to know. It's my understanding that Senator Mike Braun will announce that he's running for governor 2 weeks after Election Day.
2 weeks, okay.
And so that opens up a U.S. Senate seat, as well as, you know, laying down the first marker in the governor's race, although Eric Doden, the Fort Wayne businessman, is already out running for governor. But I think, you know, his chances are only slightly – I was going to say my chances are only slightly worse than his. but you're going to see, you know, Todd Rokita is going to have to decide what he wants to run for, governor or U.S. Senate. There's Eric Holcomb is probably going to run for the Senate seat. At least a lot of people think that. It's going to be. You know, I'm glad I'm not the state Republican chairman having to try to sort this out and tell people where to send their money, because it's going to be a mess, I think, on both fronts.
And Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, she pretty much assured me that she's running.
She's running. She's been putting together an operation to run for governor and has been trying to convince people to pick sides up until now. You know, I failed to mention her. I'm sorry yet. But, you know, Mike Braun's got his own money, and he's got more name ID than Suzanne Crouch. And I think he'd certainly have a leg up if that's what the matchups are.
And I'd be remiss.
It's going to be.
It will be interesting. And by the way, who's the Democrat that's going to step up, in your opinion? Have you heard any names?
Well, I have not. And again, they had trouble finding a Senate candidate this time around. I don't know where they're going to look for a governor. I mean, there are a lot of folks who would hope that it'd be Pete Buttigieg, but it's my understanding he lives in Michigan now.
Yeah, so. I don't think he's interested in running for governor. I think he's got a better gig where he's at. But hey, I'd be remiss if I didn't touch on this. We're a week away from daylight saving time ending, and the Senate earlier this year passed a bill that apparently Nancy Pelosi is trying to decide if she's going to move through during the lame duck, but it would make daylight saving time permanent. And you and I had a lot of fun with this issue when I was the main conferee on the Democrat side when we were trying to pass.
Would you say permanent, you mean year round?
Yeah, basically it would make it, you never would have to touch your clocks again. So you would just stay on daylight saving time year round. So,
right.
So basically, if that happens, we wouldn't like have to turn our clocks back a year from now. You'd just leave them alone, but it wouldn't seem any different during the spring through late summer, early fall. But in the winter, that would mean the 80 of 92 Indiana counties, you wouldn't see daylight in the winter till as late as 9 a.m. Eastern time.
Yeah, I tell you what, there's nothing like a time debate. doesn't matter what you do, somebody's going to be up in arms. There's going to be an industry that's going to claim a problem. There's going to be somebody who's going to claim a safety issue. It's I don't know what to tell you.
I think it's got a chance.
You know, it's a lot of trouble. It's a lot of trouble changing. The changing clocks things cuts both ways now, because my computers and my phone do it for me.
Right.
But it's a lot of trouble to change the other clocks. I've got all these battery operated clocks around my yard that you gotta open them up and go inside. It's trouble.
Well, you would agree that Indiana lawmakers will never touch that hot potato again, because at least that's my opinion, because I dealt with that, and legislators know that that's like not going to please everybody no matter what they do.
I think you're right. I think you're right. Although there's been a lot of turnover there. Maybe some people forgot.
Well, they might get the attention of Hoosiers when they figure out if that does become permanent by the federal decision. And when they realize, oh, it's dark till 9 o'clock in the winter months, that might fire up some people. But I'm still not sure that would cause any debate to reconsider Central or whatever. I think it's just leave well enough alone. But boy, that's an issue that got a lot of media time, and I've never gotten so much mail as a state legislator when it comes to any single topic. But daylight savings time definitely created a lot of talk.
Well, and you know, my first session of the Indiana General Assembly was 1983, and there was a daylight saving time vote in the state Senate that year, the idea of going to daylight saving time because we didn't observe it back then, and I think the vote was 49-1 against. And of course, you were there when it was adopted, so you know things do change. But I think you're right. There isn't anybody that wants to deal with that issue if they don't have to.
The inside scoop on that, the late Senator Marvin Rieksecker and I put the final language together outside the Bourbon Street Bar and Restaurant, which is no longer open, and that was the final conference report that was sent to the floor. So,
okay. And then we watched in the House as people hidden in doorways off the floor and changed their votes back and forth when the machine was open and tried to figure out who it was that actually pushed it over the top and then said goodbye because they were going to lose the next one.
Yeah, Bruce Borders looked at me and he pointed at Troy Woodruff and he said he just lost his reelection, and he ended up being right, of course. So, well, Jim, It's great to catch up with you again. Give your bride Pat a big hug for me, and we'll talk again, and I guess we'll just have to see how this election thing plays out a week from Tuesday.
Great to talk to you, Dave.
Hey, good to catch up with you, Jim. Jim Shella, former Wish TV State House reporter and longtime host of Indiana Week in Review on today's Focus on the Community, which is produced by the DLC Media News Center. This program is broadcast Saturday mornings at 6 on 104.9 WAXI, 7 a.m. on WAMB, AM 1130, 106.9 and 99.5, Sundays at 6 a.m. on 105.5 WVIG, and 7 a.m. on WFMB 92.7. For a download of this show and other past programs, visit any one of our radio station websites. I'm Dave Crooks. Thanks for listening.